We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Talk some NBA. He is on X at Trevor_Lane. Trevor, what's happening, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, Gabe. Thanks so much for having me back on.
Absolutely. Have you been enjoying? I know it's not a huge time for NBA, although the Western Conference is nuts. We'll get to that in a second. Have you been enjoying a little bit of the NCAA tournament?
A little bit. You know, talking about this on our show earlier today with Keith, I mentioned, though, like, I think I've hit my at least college basketball saturation point. I had to take a little break from it over the weekend because I watched so much basketball over the course of this last week. I finally had to step away. But boy, this has been a blast.
Yeah, but you've been watching a few, you know, NBA prospects along the way. I saw a little thing about Cody Williams you posted not too long ago from Colorado.
Yeah. So there have been a few NBA guys, and Cody Williams is one of them. I saw some flashes from him where I went, okay, you know, there's some ups and downs here, but you can see what teams may be interested in there. I think I jinxed Kentucky by saying, oh, well, they've got all right. These NBA prospects on their team. They must go deep into this tournament. Nope, they went out round one. So that kind of hurt from an NBA perspective. But, yeah, there's still a handful of guys that we're keeping an eye on for sure.
It still is kind of nuts, though, to see, like, the Kentucky folks and wanting to fire John Calipari. He's got that massive buyout and everything else, and he still brings in great recruiting. He's got the second-rated recruiting class for next year. He's got some NBA guys coming in. It just seems kind of interesting that I saw some people from Kentucky sort of, debating, you know, how can it get much worse? We lost to St. Peter's as a 2-seed, and, you know, we lost to Oakland as a 3-seed this year. We're trending in the wrong direction. It can get worse. Trust me, it can get a whole lot worse. We're in Memphis right now. We also see what happened in their state with Louisville and Kenny Payne, 4 wins and 8 wins in consecutive years. John Calipari, for, you know, as bad as it's been lately, I think he's built up enough good faith. Although, Kentucky fans, they expect a whole lot.
Well, you can look at it two ways, right? You can look at it and say, well, they've got this great talent. There's no way they should be going out in the first round. And that's absolutely correct. But at the same time, they've got, I think it's 9 guys that are to varying degrees on the NBA radar.
Right.
I mean, that's absurd. So the fact that you managed to get those guys to begin with, that counts for something, right?
It should. It absolutely should. Now let's hop into the NBA, and I have to start in one spot, and that's the Western Conference. It's going to be absolutely nuts to watch how this all shakes out down the stretch of the season. But from 6 to basically 11, they're separated by 6.5 games. But that 10 and 11 spot, the Warriors are in a scary predicament right now. Rockets are trending in a great direction. Jalen Green has been playing the best ball of his career. He's got a couple of 40-point outings. Over the weekend, had a 41-point outing, and 147 points were put up by the Rockets. They have 8 straight wins, and the Warriors are struggling. I did hear Draymond Green basically say, I don't give a damn about the Rockets right now. It feels like he should give a damn about the Rockets because they could knock them out of the play-in ultimately. They're only one spot behind, and the Lakers have a 2-game lead on the Warriors. This is the last battle we're looking at for playoff positioning.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time of year where as much as, and really the players should just try to focus on their own team and playing the best basketball they can, but the reality is how everybody around them performs, it matters, and because that's just how math works, right? If other teams are winning games and you're winning games, you're not going to move up in the standings. If you're losing and they're winning, uh-oh. You might get caught, and that's where the Warriors are right now. They've lost their last couple of games. The Rockets are on an 8-game win streak, so they could very well turn that into an interesting race. Boy, wouldn't that be a nightmare for Adam Silver if the Warriors get knocked out of even the play-in? that wouldn't be ideal from an NBA perspective, but the Rockets are playing great basketball. Jalen Green is playing efficient basketball on the offensive end, which has not always been the case with him, so he's really taken a step forward. And this is the time of year where we talk about March Madness in the college tournament. The March Madness in the NBA, it is watching this jockeying for positioning here. The Western Conference, it is absolutely insane. People are so upset about my Lakers and the fact that they're stuck in the 9 seed. They're actually winning games at a higher clip than they did last season.
Right.
And they're stuck in the 9 seed. If this were last season, their record right now would have them in the 4 seed. That's how good the Western Conference is right now.
What's been the biggest difference with Jalen Green? Is this just a heater that we're looking at, or is he playing better ball just in general, taking better shots? Because that's always been the big problem with him, is he just puts up everything.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, right, where he's being a little bit better with the shots. He's obviously playing with supreme confidence, which he absolutely should be the way that he's playing right now. But I also think some of this has to be a heater. I mean, he's shooting 51% from the field, 42% from three. I don't buy that's just simply what he is as a player now, right? I mean, last month he shot 26% from three. So there is definitely some flukiness to these numbers, but it's also possible with a guy that's as young as he is, 22 years old, that his game is just hitting another level. So it wouldn't shock me if he settles in somewhere around, 35, 36% from three, 45, 46% from the field or something, which is where he ultimately needs to get. And that would still create a very, very good player. But I do think there is a little bit of flukiness at play right here, where he's on a heater right now. Enjoy it while it lasts. It's not going to last forever, but the Rockets sure are glad to see it happening.
Now, if you're predicting who's going to actually get that 10 spot, is it still going to be Golden State? Obviously, 12 games left, and they are, I think, 25th, according to Tankathon, when it comes to remaining strength of schedule. So they have a really easy strength of schedule left, while the Rockets, I think, are right outside of the top 10, 11th, according to Tankathon, and remaining strength of schedule. Do you still lean the Warriors' way, or do you just not have a whole lot of trust?
Yeah, no, I still think that the Warriors get it done. I think that they ultimately wind up in that 10 spot. They're a veteran team. They know what they need to do in order to win games down the stretch. I will say, if the Rockets are going to get this done, though, if the Rockets are going to steal that 10 seed away from Golden State, the game coming up on April 4th is huge. That's Rockets at home against the Warriors. If you want that 10 seed, they have to get that game. They've got some difficult games elsewhere. But you know what? You look down the stretch, they've got the Pelicans as their second-to-last game. The Pelicans may be shutting things down by then, depending on what the standings look like. They finish with Portland and Utah on either side of New Orleans. They could finish off with three straight wins right there. So Houston could still, despite having a more difficult schedule, could still find themselves in a solid position here. But they have to get the direct head-to-head game against Golden State coming up on April 4th.
Yeah, then I think the biggest crapshoot, too, is from 6 to 8. Suns, Kings, Mavericks separated by a half game. Kings and Mavericks are tied at 41-29. Suns have just played one more game. They're at 42-29. There's no guess. I'm not even going to ask you to guess who ends up getting into that sixth spot. But this is going to be massive. I mean, if the Suns end up in the play-in, that is a lot harder road than what they thought they were going to have to be dealing with after sort of trading for Kevin Durant, getting Brad Beal, all those good players on one team.
For sure. And a lot of this is just how good the West is right now. No matter what, I mean, look, your Grizzlies should be in the mix here, like solidly in the mix. They just kind of got deleted this season due to injuries and suspension and all that stuff. So imagine when you add them into the mix next year in the Western Conference. It's crazy. So if you knew going in that there were going to be good teams in the play-in, there were going to be probably good teams that don't even make the play-in in the Western Conference. And Phoenix, they're the team that I'm looking at that could really drop here. They have the most difficult strength of schedule remaining in the NBA, though Sacramento has the third most difficult. But they do have a game left against the Celtics, and if you've seen what's going on with Boston, they're already, despite the fact that they're on this win streak, they're pulling their guys right now because they're locked into their seed. So I don't know if seeing the Celtics ahead on the schedule is quite as daunting as it would have been a few weeks ago. So I have, between Sacramento and Phoenix, Phoenix is the team most likely to drop down. The Mavs' remaining strength of schedule, relatively easy, sitting at 20th. So that's the team that I would pick if I had to pick to get that sixth seed, but it is going to be an absolute battle through these final few weeks of the season to see who gets out of the play-in. You know, everybody's trying to because nobody wants to be in that position.
And Trevor, this is something we've been trying to debate for a while. You brought up the Grizzlies. If everything was, like, fine this year and Ja was back after 25 games and didn't have the shoulder injury and Steven Adams wasn't out for the year, obviously Brandon Clark would still have to be out. But if they would have had some of these injuries go their correct direction, we have been debating, like, where would they even be in this Western Conference? This is an ultra-competitive Western Conference with the Thunder and the Timberwolves there emerging, seeing the Clippers stay healthy, seeing the Pelicans stay healthy, and Zion Williamson playing some of the best ball of his career. This, you know, even if it would have gone right for the Grizzlies, it still feels like they'd be sort of middle of the pack. I don't think they'd be second in the West with 50 wins like they had been the previous 2 years.
Right, but that doesn't necessarily reflect the quality of the team. That's more of a commentary on the quality of of the conference as a whole. And so that's where, yeah, they could be, because when you say it, right, if you say, well, they're fifth seed, sixth seed, something like that, it sounds like, oh, man, they'd be taking a step back. No, parity is crazy in the Western Conference right now. Good luck figuring out who's going to come out of this thing. I mean, I still have Denver as the team that I would pick, but there's, I mean, you could make a case for just about any of these teams to make their way through. So, yeah, but they would, I think there's no question, they would firmly be in the mix in the Western Conference. They'd be another team that would be right there with a real shot at advancing. And so picking the seed, it's almost irrelevant because all of these teams are so, so close.
Now, you say that it's going to be really hard. The parity's huge in the Western Conference. The two teams there at 2 and 3 are young, impressionable. They haven't had a whole lot of shots at this thing. How much do you trust the Thunder and the Timberwolves? Because I know what I can expect out of the Nuggets and, for the most part, out of the Clippers because they have a lot of players with a lot of playoff experience. Thunder and Timberwolves, not the same.
I'll tell you what, right now, we typically look at point differential as a key indicator of overall quality of a team. The Thunder have the best point differential in the Western Conference. They're actually the team I trust the least, and that's because of their age. They're a young team. And really, the Minnesota Timberwolves, I think their game translates better to the postseason where they're such a defensive-minded team. They shut teams down. That, I think, is going to afford them well in the playoffs. Now, that's, you know, big asterisk if Karl Anthony Towns is back, if Rudy Gobert is healthy, right? And then you've got this great veteran leader in Mike Conley there. I think that team is more built for the postseason. OKC, though, I'll tell you what, I think this is the last year. If you're going to beat the Thunder in the playoffs, this is your chance. Because moving forward, this team's going to be a juggernaut, particularly when they've got this war chest of picks to play with this summer. They've got room to go make moves. This team is going to be a real problem for years to come. So I don't know that this is the year for OKC, but my goodness, is their future bright.
Well, what do you expect them to do with those picks? Obviously, they're not just going to make all of them. They're going to have to trade them potentially and go find another piece. And, like, what when you look at the Thunder, what are they missing for the future? Like, do you think that there's any glaring holes in that roster going into the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I think you need something in the middle. You need a little bit more size that you can put in there. And I'm talking about a physical banger. I look at Jonas Valanciunas. Wouldn't he be a great target for them with, say, the mid-level exception, a guy who you can play 20-ish minutes a night, doesn't have to get 30, 35 minutes or anything like that. You don't have to break the bank on him, but he would give you that physical quality in the paint. I think that would be a really nice addition. And then with those picks, you're just being opportunistic, doing what you can to go add as many 3-and-D style players. Like, for example, what if the Nets decide they're going to put Mikal Bridges out on the block?
Right.
I mean, the Thunder could offer all the picks if they want to, whatever combination they need in order to get something like that done and put another high-quality wing out there with them in addition to a little bit more of a physical presence in the post. And boy, would that team be a real challenge to deal with.
Well, damn! If they're gonna try to go get Mikal Bridges, might have to be what, 8 first round picks at this point. It feels like the Nets are not the Nets. I don't really get what they're doing. I mean, me and my producer Connor have had so many different discussions about this. Like, they have every 3-and-D guy under the sun. They have every trade deadline target under the sun. Yet they say they want to build around Mikal Bridges. There were reports about them denying the 4 first round picks that the Grizzlies threw at them. Threw at them to go get Mikal Bridges. I don't really understand what they're doing. You mentioned Mikal Bridges if he ever becomes available. Do you think he will become available? It feels like the Nets and their front office and the higher-ups really value him and what he could mean to that team long-term.
I think, I guess maybe it's me expecting teams to do a rational thing, which is a faulty expectation
right,
because it doesn't happen as often as it should. There's reporting that the Nets turned down their own first round picks from Houston, getting their picks back plus Jalen Green for Mikal Bridges at the trade deadline. Now, maybe there were protections on those picks. I don't know exactly what that looked like, but they're pretty sold on him. But the problem is he's going to turn 28 coming up here in August. So it's not, and that's not to say he's old, but he's not as young as you think he is. So if this is going to be your future and you're just starting a rebuild, you're probably talking a few years down the road before you really get any traction. And then you're talking about a 30-year-old Bridges. How long is that window really going to be open? So if I'm the Nets and I'm really going to commit to a rebuild, yeah, I'm moving him. But I probably would have moved him at the trade deadline when I could have got my own picks back and a young talent like Jalen Green. So that's the confounding part here about what the Nets are doing. It doesn't seem to make sense. There's a lot of teams, Chicago's done it too, that just don't seem to want to rip off the Band-Aid and give themselves a boost for their long-term future. They're instead focused on the present, which in the case of the Nets and Bridges, I would be trying to make that move right now if I'm Brooklyn, or this summer if I'm them, trying to get something done and make a move and truly commit to this thing and build for the future, because I don't know that Bridges is that piece that you even want to build around as a 1A guy. I think he's a better complementary piece.
And what's really strange is, like, it felt like they ripped off the Band-Aid. You know what I mean? It felt like the moving Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, it felt like that was ripping off the Band-Aid. Now they it felt like they just got a bunch of assets, could get a bunch of picks with the assets they have at the trade deadline or in the offseason, and they're not ripping off that Band-Aid, which is just strange to me. I know they wanted to compete, but they don't have any level of compete with the roster they have right now. And I don't know what they could do to actually add to it in the draft or otherwise. It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense what they're building.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. It's odd. And part of me almost wonders is, you know, there was a point early in the season where Kevin Durant and the Suns were struggling and Bridges was playing well. And there was that little bit of buzz of like, should the Suns have made that move? Uh-oh, did the Suns give? And I'm sure at that moment the Nets were feeling pretty good. I wonder how much of it is just trying to hang on to that feeling like, no, we can show those guys. We can show Kyrie. We can show KD. We're going to win despite losing you guys. Right. And that is the path that leads to madness.
Well, and I've seen Mikal Bridges on a championship-contending team with the Suns. He was, what, a third or fourth option offensively at best? Is sort of what we're looking at. Having him as a one option, it's not an option. It's not an option. I talk with Trevor Lane at Trevor_Lane on X. Now, moving to the Eastern Conference, Celtics at the top. Who else? Like, who else do you really think can win the East? Who else do you really buy into?
I mean, I'll tell you this. I know Celtics fans right now are praying that they don't see Miami in round one.
Of course. Yeah, I get that.
Right. That's certainly a thing. But other than that, I mean, there's an 11-game gap between the Celtics and the Bucks. There's an 11-game gap between the Nuggets and the Lakers, the 1 and the 9 seed. That's how big the gap is between the 1 and the 2 in the East. That's absolutely insane. It's the Celtics and then everybody else. They're in a completely different tier, much as it pains me to say.
Right.
But Milwaukee, maybe they have a shot. You've got Giannis. You've always got a chance at it. I'm still, the Knicks are near and dear to my heart with how hard they play. They're an enjoyable watch most nights. Just they really get after teams. They are a pain in the butt to deal with on the glass, even with guys out. But they got to get healthy. They've got a number of guys that are still out. OG Anunoby, who knows what's going on with his injury. The Cavs, they can turn it up, but they've lost 3 in a row. They're 3-7. They're dealing with a ton of injuries of their own right. And then the Magic and the Pacers, I don't think they're really there yet. So, I mean, I really look at it, despite the fact that they're a 7th seed, it's Miami and then Milwaukee are really the only two right now that I could say have a real claim to maybe giving the Celtics a run in the postseason. Everybody else, I think, is either too injured or too young.
And the one thing that has bothered me all year, and I don't know if it bothers you the same because you are, you know, you cover the Lakers and you've been a Lakers fan. Now you are on you do a show with Keith Smith, who is a Celtics fan, so
yes,
maybe you have a little bit of a soft spot, but what bothers me is every time they lose a game, it becomes, oh, they're fraudulent. They're just going to fall short in the playoffs again. That has been one of my pet peeves of this entire NBA season, is watching how the national media covers the Celtics. They win a whole lot, they lose one game, and then it feels like there are sweeping indictments everywhere on these hot take shows.
Well, and it's not even just the national media. It's Celtics fans, too, that you see it from, who are just so upset. Anytime they can go on a 9-game win streak and then lose the next game and the sky is falling, but that's kind of fandom in general. But I think the problem that the Celtics have is that it's everybody remembers last season, what happened in the playoffs, and the only way to fix that is to win in the playoffs. Whatever they do in the regular season right now, despite how impressive they've looked, they will always have but they have to do it in the playoffs. And so until we get to the playoffs and they beat Miami or they go all the way, people are going to be able to jump back to that and say, well, but it doesn't really matter. It's the regular season, and they're going to fall apart in the playoffs yet again. They're the most dominant team this season by a long shot. They have the best point differential in the NBA by a long shot. They have a huge lead in the East. They can already take their foot off the gas pedal, and they're going to cruise all the way through the finish line here for the regular season. So there's no reason to jump back into that, like, well, the sky is falling narrative anytime they drop a game. They've been incredible all season long. Nobody else has been close to them. So if there was ever a time for Celtics fans, for anybody to feel confident that this team's going to win, it's right now, while still acknowledging that, yeah, they do have to prove it in the postseason, but you can't ask for much more than what this team has done in the regular season.
How worried should Joe Mazzulla be if they do fall short again this year in the playoffs?
It wouldn't be ideal, but I mean, look at how well this team has played all season long. Mm-hmm. If something fluky happens, especially if it's, you know, they get hit by a bunch of injuries or something and that knocks them out of the playoffs, I think he should be just fine. I mean, this team is producing wins at an insane level. They've been clearly the class of the Eastern Conference. Teams just can't hang with them on either end of the floor. I think even if somehow they get beat in the finals, I don't think he should be. He should feel the pressure a little bit, but I don't think they should move on from him just because of that. They've had such a great season so far. I know it's championship or bust for them right now,
right.
But what this team has done, I mean, they've been absolutely fantastic all season long, and you'd have to think that ultimately that is going to pay off sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but we always have these conversations, though, about coaches. I mean, Nick Nurse had to get fired. You had Mike Budenholzer fired because he got butted out in the first round last year. Like, it just, as much as we want to hope that these franchises will stick by their guy because of regular season success and maybe a little bit of historical success in the playoffs, they just don't seem to. They don't seem to. We are in a ring culture, ring chasing era of NBA basketball, and that doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon.
Well, that's true. And part of that too is the fan reaction is very real, and the reaction of the general, you know, the news media and everything is real as well. So as soon as something like that happens, the response, the pain that is being felt from, say, Celtics fans in that moment, the frustration, they want to see something happen. This is bad. You must fix it right now. When sometimes patience is what really does pay off. We've seen many times in the past where franchises have made a move in order to fix a problem that they thought was this glaring issue, and it's led them astray. And I speak from a little bit of familiarity there. I mean, the Lakers made that big move to go get Russell Westbrook because, oh my gosh, we have to get another star alongside LeBron and AD. And they blew up a team that probably could have been making more finals runs had they just been a little bit more patient. So I think that in general, NBA teams need to show a bit more patience while understanding that the general public and the media is going to be calling for moves to happen for some sort of change. That's not always actually the best thing for a franchise.
All right, enough contender talk. Talking with Trevor Lane at Trevor_Lane. Obviously, we're in Memphis, so we want to know about the NBA draft and what could come of this NBA draft. I think when we're chasing to the bottom, the Grizzlies are 7 from the bottom right now because the Raptors have passed them. They're trying to get into that top 6 so they can keep their pick instead of you know, letting it be outside of the top 6. Obviously, the draft lottery has to play out. But if they're outside of the top 6, that pick will then convey and go to the Spurs. I sit here covering the Grizzlies, watching Grizzlies fans and how they interact with one another. I don't like the thought of the Spurs potentially getting two top 10 picks alongside Victor Wembanyama. I don't think the rest of the NBA, though, should like it as well. I understand that the Grizzlies play them four times a year, so you know teams in the Eastern Conference, teams that are outside of their division, may not feel the same way. But having two top 10 picks, regardless of how this draft looks, next to Victor Wembanyama is a scary proposition.
Yeah, it's scary in that not necessarily that they're going to use those picks to select players, but there's probably going to be some big names that are going to be out there on the market. And the Spurs, with how good Wembanyama has been already, they have plenty of incentive to go ahead and fork over some of those picks. I mean, there's so many nights where I'm watching the Spurs and I think, God, if they had a point guard,
right,
that could really get Wembanyama the ball in the right spots, this team suddenly becomes a lot more dangerous. I mean, if Trae Young hits the block and the Spurs have two picks like that to potentially throw into the mix, they could wind up being the landing spot for him, or maybe bring back DeJounte Murray if the Hawks want to go that way. I don't necessarily think the Spurs are going to use picks on future players. They certainly could, but I think this is a team that could very well surrender those picks to get better very quickly in a trade, and that could make, when we've been talking all about how much of a mess the Western Conference is, imagine if you have an improving, aging, or organically improving Houston Rockets team that has incentive to go add some players as well, and then San Antonio takes a step forward. The West has been insane this year. It was bonkers last year, too. Next season, I mean, it could be absolutely unreal if the Spurs are able to make a significant move here, and them potentially getting that pick just makes it all the more likely that they become a problem to deal with next year, too.
And isn't it funny, like around the NBA draft, with all the hype around Victor Wembanyama, I think there's a lot of people that watch the NBA that have this tendency with, you know, young players to just sort of disregard them until they see them play. And there was a lot of people saying, oh, Victor Wembanyama, he's skinny. There's going to be some growth he has to go through. We'll see if he's going to be all that ESPN and CBS and all these sports media conglomerates are saying he's going to turn into. He has gone up and above and beyond any expectation that was realistic for his first year, leading the league in blocks, 3.5 per game, 21 points per game, about 10.5 rebounds per game. I have resigned myself at this point, Trevor. He's going to win MVPs. He could potentially be winning championships. He's going to be an all-NBA type guy. He's going to win a defensive player of the year. I have resigned myself to that fact already, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the way this is going right now. He's been everything that the Spurs and NBA fans, basketball fans, could have hoped he could be. He is a major difference maker on both ends of the floor. I mean, this guy is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you look at the Spurs without him, I mean, their net rating is absurd. They're like a minus 12 without Wembanyama on the floor. They're getting crushed whenever he's not in there, and that's as a guy who's trying to find his way in the NBA. There's an adjustment period, right? You have to get used to the speed, the strength, the physicality of the league, the way the game is played, the way the game is officiated. And he's already a top-tier talent. He's absolutely incredible. And that's why I say if this team were to go out and get a point guard who can get him the basketball in the right spots and maybe add a few key pieces here or there, they could very quickly be a team to deal with. He's running away with the Rookie of the Year. Chet Holmgren has been great. But Wembanyama is going to get the Rookie of the Year. There's no question. And, man, the Spurs did it again.
They lucked into it, though, too. We know how that went, especially with a foreign player. They always seem to luck into those foreign players in the NBA draft. Yep. But it is what it is. It looks like, too, if they were anything but, like, bottom five in defense this year, he probably would win Defensive Player of the Year, right? It's going to go to Rudy Gobert because the Timberwolves are a very good defensive team and the Spurs are not. But if they just had their numbers boosted a little bit, it feels like Victor Wembanyama may get that in his rookie year too.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year
at
probably
some
multiple
point
times over the course of his career. It's coming.
Right, and then MVP, real quick before I let you go, Nikola Jokic?
Yeah, I've got Jokic as the MVP. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander definitely has a case, but to me, when it's close like this, I just go with, I mean, which player would I rather have on my team right now? And it's Jokic, and I love SGA. I think he's a phenomenal player. But to me, it's Nikola Jokic. He's incredible. I can't say anything that hasn't already been said about him. He's fantastic, and he's my my pretty easy pick for the MVP this year.
Yep, especially when Joel Embiid had to butt out. He just knew it was headed this direction. But, hey, it's deserved. He's the best player on the planet, and it shows every time he actually hits the floor. But, Trevor, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for hopping on today.
Hey, no problem, Gabe. Thank you so much for having me. Always a blast to talk basketball with you.
Yes, sir. We'll do it again soon. That is Trevor Lane at Trevor_Lane on X. He is a host for Lakers Nation, also the front office show with Keith Smith, who joins the show every once in a while as well. Lakers and Celtics duo on the front office show. Make sure you go check that out as well on YouTube.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.